more experience equals more safety, up to a point. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Arrow News. Welcome in to the Arrow News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Bob's online newsletter returned in November after a five-month absence over the summer. And we're talking about a couple of topics inspired by that on the safety front. Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you today, Paul.
Bob, in your welcome back edition of the newsletter, you talked about an article that I think has some timely significance at this time of year, and that is a beach pilot who died in low IFR, despite the fact that his alternate airport was clear, and despite or maybe because of extensive experience, is your posit in this article. Tell us what we can learn from this guy.
Well, you know, there's some data to suggest that we're most at risk at pilots during those first 200 hours of gaining valuable experience as PICs, as pilots in command. And then the accident rate stabilizes somewhat until we get up over that 10,000-hour mark. And then, for some reason, it begins to spike again, and strongly suggesting that there may be an element of overconfidence that besets us after we have more than 10 or 12,000 hours, in many cases, of accident-free flying. Whether we become self-complacent, whether we become just too passive in the cockpit, whether we become, as I pointed out in this article, I believe overconfident that we've done something so many times without incident that why not think we can do it again? And that's when we get into trouble. I remember several years ago doing repeated night IFR approaches in at two minimums on a GPS approach, snow covered, wintry night. And after about the fourth night, I called my own pilot mentor. You know, each of us have our own pilot mentors, our trusted, respected friends. And I reported a problem that I had on the approaches the night before. And he said, "What was that?" And I said, "You know, I didn't have the sweaty palms. You know, normally when I shoot an approach to minimums in bad weather, I'll develop, you know, a little bit of anxiety, some perspiration on the forehead, and some sweaty palms. And last night I didn't get it." And my mentor said, "Yes, indeed, you do have a problem. Let's sit down and talk." And he was perceptive enough to know that I was becoming complacent, overconfident, and had lost the edge. And he says, "You know, that's exactly when you're going to find a problem resulting in." Unfortunately, that's what happened in this particular incident with the Bonanza pilot. Shot an approach to minimums, apparently ducked under those minimums at his own home airport, struck a perimeter fence at the end of the airport just in front of the runway, and died in the process.
All right. Now, entertainers will tell you, and some have said publicly, that if you do not have butterflies before a performance, you know, it's obviously it's more comfortable, but you may not do your best work. Is this kind of the same thing where you need that little bit of adrenaline or whatever is going on physiologically to make you be sharp?
I believe so. I believe we have to be on our mark during anything other than what we would like to think is absolutely normal operations. A normal operation would be a visual approach or an approach well above minimums on an instrument approach. But when we're going right down to IFR minimums where we're only several hundred feet above the ground, you know, to do that without an edge, to do that without some perspiration, without some anxiety or butterflies, I think we do become complacent. We're just not as sharp as we need to be. I understand that's the case in the animal kingdom, where, you know, when birds or animals are suspecting that there may be a risk nearby, they their heartbeats go up, they become alert, they become hypersensitive to what's going on around them. We need to have this. And when we find ourselves doing something so repetitively that we just don't take the facts at hand and deal with them, I suspect there was an element of that with the tragic crash of Continental 3407 here in Clarence a couple of years ago, where the accident data, the NTSB report, blamed the pilots for simply not paying attention to the store during those final seconds before the crash.
All right. Now, that brings up an interesting point. Obviously, these folks did not have the opportunity to just call in and say, you know, I think I need to take a couple of weeks off from doing true instrument approaches. They, you know, if you're flying checks or flying airline passengers or whatever, you have a job or a contract and you're going to have to get back up there and do it again tomorrow night and the night after that and the night after that. What can we do to replace that adrenaline? Or is there any way to replace that adrenaline or those butterflies feeling with something more intellectual and less physiological in order to keep our edge?
Well, the two-pilot crew is one good way where one pilot is watching the other pilot and trying to keep an eye on things. Other is automation in the cockpit that can give us certain alerts when things are happening. I wish there was some way to prevent an airplane from flying below minimums, but the technology will not permit us to do that. It's just a conscious discipline, self-discipline rule that we have to impose upon ourselves. I know in my own flying that while I may occasionally, take liberties in an airplane, there are a couple of rules that are just absolutely unbreakable in my mind. One is to fly under the influence of any kind of alcohol, either the night before on an early morning flight, or absolute refusal to fly down below published minimums under any circumstance. There's just no reason to ever have to do that unless we're on fire or we're out of gas. Other than that, that alternate may be inconvenient. It may represent a logistical headache if we have to go to that alternate, but at least we'll live to fly another day. And again, it's self-imposed, self-discipline. And I think that's part of what we need to learn in the primary flight training, our own primary flight training. We need to have instilled certain basic principles, certain inalienable truths about what we do, that we simply will not break this rule or that rule and go ahead and live to fly another day.
Bob, this is the first Monday of standard time again for North America, and let's talk when we come back from the break about some seasonal risks we face as a result each year. Bob Miller is my guest, back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Pipermatch.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. Bob, it is now back to the point where when most of us in North America get off work for the day, it's already dark for the evening. I guess if we're going to stay current and stay proficient, we may be spending more time flying in the dark. Let's run down a few things people should keep in mind when we get into this time of year that make flying at night different from flying in the daytime.
Well, lots of things are different. We sometimes take this for granted, thinking that night is no different than day, but clearly it is. We do not have the visual cues outside the window of the airplane. We have certain illusions that we're not accustomed to seeing during the day, illusions such as the black hole effect when we're shooting an approach down into over a dark area to an airport where it looks like it gives us the illusion that we're much higher than we really are, and will kind of motivate us or, seduce us into flying lower. The inability to judge speed from looking out the window, too, is another area. IFR and VFR conditions become somewhat interposed. It could be a very, very VFR night as far as published weather is concerned, but without visual stars, without lights on the ground, or out over open water, what is otherwise visual conditions can turn into conditions that require instruments in order to stay straight and level. The untrained or non-proficient pilot can get himself into trouble in this way. Also, flying at night, we tend to be more or less rested. We've been up all day long. So we're, going into our flying experience, having been up for 12, 14 hours or more, and we're or, as I said, less rested and less proficient. Lots of things we have to consider about, consider when going into the night arena. And that's why, there's additional requirements imposed upon pilots flying at night in terms of, currency requirements to take passengers. The new light sport rule, for example, doesn't even permit night flying. So indeed, there are differences, and this is something that we need to train for.
Okay, now I know all about your part of the world because I grew up in East Aurora. I know what the weather does at this time of year. Is it common in other parts of North America for the risk of icing encounters to go up at this time of year?
Well, temperatures, of course, drop in the evening, but sure, as the days get shorter, the winter weather is coming about, and icing is indeed a factor. So that when we find ourselves flying more at night, we're going to be subjected to greater risks of cold weather flying and icing conditions. And icing at night in an airplane is different than icing during the day. You know, it's one thing to look out the window and see the leading edge of our airplane to see if it's accreting any ice. At night, you know, we have to reach around there likely with a flashlight unless we have an ice light on the aircraft itself. We're not as aware of icing building up on the wings. So, yeah, that's another factor. Frost on the wings. When we go to untie that airplane that's been left out, we may not be as careful in our pre-flight experience and take off with frost on the wings and have an untoward event as a result of that. Wintertime, nighttime flying, a whole host of additional risks.
All right. Well, Bob, as always, we appreciate talking to you about these things. We hope our listeners will think twice as they encounter these seasonal differences in conditions, and we will look forward to talking to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can always find the latest edition of Bob Miller's newsletter, as well as the archives, at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.